Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk, call a roll.
Roll call for Tuesday, February 8th. Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Anderson.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Father Cronkleton.
And let us pray. Lord God, we thank you for the wind, the cold, the snow, and the ice. For when winter sets in like this, there are no mosquitoes. Most seriously, Lord, please look after those who have to be out in this weather. Keep them warm and safe. Let those in need of shelter find warmth and hospitality. And Lord, unlike the wind that may be lazy, that is too slothful to go around a person so it goes right through them, help us to be diligent and focused about our task. For since this is our last day for second reading for bills originating in this chamber, we need to be fleet, yet still be thorough and thoughtful about our work. Pour forth your knowledge, your wisdom, and your prudence upon us, and guide us so that we may be good leaders and statesmen. We ask this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in a pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 7th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, that report is adopted. Our doctor for the day today is Doug Parks, M.D. Thank you, Doctor, and I think that... And then a nurse for the day is Annette Cantlin and Lori Morgan. Those nurses come to us from the Wyoming State Hospital. Thank you for coming all this way to assist us. On this day in Wyoming history, 1938, the Alcova Dam was completed. And on this day in U.S. history, in 1910, the Boy Scouts of America, which is modeled after the Boy Scouts of England, was incorporated. And I understand there might be some other significance on this day. Senator Perkins, do you have something for us?
Mr. President, I might have privilege of the floor for just a moment.
You may.
At about 8:15 this morning, I became a grandpa for the first time. My daughter Ashley had a daughter, Brinley Brown is her name, who was 7 pounds and 17 and a half inches.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
And Senator Johnson, I understand that you may have some distinguished guests that we should recognize.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. President.
You may.
Thank you very much. Fellow senators, we have an organization in Laramie County called Junior Leadership of Laramie County. And they're in their junior year of our various high schools around the area. We have 6 of them up in the gallery up there, and there's about an equal amount down at the house. Would you please welcome these distinguished youth?
Welcome to the Senate. We hope that you have a fun and enlightening day on your visit today. Messages from the House.
February the 7th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, Committee of the Whole, indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 198, Admissibility of Evidence in Sex Offense Cases, Ayes 29, Noes 30, Excused 1. House Bill Number 244, Unemployment Insurance Amendments, Ayes 25, Noes 34, Excused 1. And House Joint Resolution Number 7, Distribution of Excess Funds, Ayes 13, Noes 46, Excused 1. The bills have been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 254, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 254, Property Taxation Appeals, an act relating to property taxation, sponsored by Representative Throne, passed the House on third reading, Ayes 59, Excused 1.
House Bill 254 has been referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 144, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 144, School District Bonds and Act Relating to Public Funds, sponsored by Representative Kraft. Passed the House on third reading, Ayes 59, Excused 1.
House Bill 144 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill Number 7, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 7, Wyoming Veterinarian Medicine Practice Act 2, an act relating to veterinarians, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee. Passed the House on third reading, Ayes 59, Excused 1.
House Bill 7 has been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 135, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 135, State Lands Improvements 2, an act relating to state land, sponsored by Representative Gere. Passed the House on third reading, Ayes 58, Noes 1, Excused 1.
House Bill 135 has been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 151, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 151, Hydropower Development and Act Relating to the State Loan and Investment Board, sponsored by Representative Semlich. Passed the House on third reading, Ayes 59, Excused 1.
House Bill 151 has been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 230. First reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 230, Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector Systems 2, an act relating to condemnation, sponsored by Representative Brown. Passed the House on third reading, Ayes 53, Noes 6, Excused 1.
House Bill 230 has been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill Number 206, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 206, Emergency Response Incidents, an act relating to the Wyoming Emergency Response Act, sponsored by Representative Throne. Passed the House on third reading, Ayes 59, Excused 1.
House Bill 206 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 209, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 209, Emergency Medical Review Organizations, and Act Relating to Public Health and Safety, sponsored by Representative Green. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 209 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 211, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 211, County Memorial Hospital Board Members Removal, an Act Relating to County Memorial Hospitals, sponsored by Representative Throne. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 211 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 224, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 224, Platted Plots Requirement, an Act Relating to Property, sponsored by Representative Miller. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 224 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 217, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 217, Production States Agreement, an Act Relating to the Legislature, sponsored by Representative Lubnow. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 217 has been referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 39, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 39, Health Litigation Fund, an Act Relating to the Administration of Government and National Health Care Reform, sponsored by the Labor Committee. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 50, noes 9, excused 1.
House Bill 39 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. House Bill 193, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 193, Nursing Care Facility Assessment and Act Relating to Welfare, sponsored by Representative Childers. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1.
House Bill 193 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. House Bill 215, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 215, Department of Health Reorganization and Act Relating to the Administration of Government, sponsored by Representative Lubnow. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 215 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. Reports from standing committees.
February the 8th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 6, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Dockstetter, and Driscoll. No, Senator Burns and Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 8th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 139, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Johnson, Landon, Nutting, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 8th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 177, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Landon, and Nutting. Noes, Senator Johnson and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Bills on second readings. Senator Bebow.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, House Bill 129, engrossed,
does have an appropriation, and I ask that it be re-referred to the Appropriations Committee.
Thank you. It has been requested that House Bill 129 engrossed be referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Seeing no objections, so ordered. Senator Crowe.
Mr. President, House Bill 127, School Finance Recalibration, was read in yesterday. It does have an appropriations. I request that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Request is that House Bill 127 be also referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Seeing no objection, that is so ordered. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, does have an appropriation. I would ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2 for the appropriation.
It's been requested that House Bill, was that 139?
Yes, sir, 139.
139 be re-referred to Committee Number 2. Seeing no objection, that is so ordered. Senator Perkins. Go ahead. Try it now.
Okay. Do you want me to start over?
Why don't you, so we get a good order.
Okay. The following, I'd ask that the following House bills be referred to Committee Number 6. House Bill 88, Guides and Outfitters, Representative McComey. House Bill 69, Prescriptions for Marijuana in Ballot, Representative Buchanan. House Bill 160, Management and Audit Committee, Subpoena Power by the Management Audit Committee. Thank you, Mr. President.
Request is that House Bill 88 be referred to Committee Number 6. Also, that House Bill 69 be referred to Committee Number 6. And then House Bill 160 be referred to Committee Number 6. Seeing no objection, that is so ordered. I will say to the body, you'll probably see this as we continue to try to balance this load. We got a really heavy load for the Judiciary Committee for whatever reason, and as we continue to sort these out, we're going to explore ways in which we can assign them to another committee with lesser load but still do justice in regard to fair hearing of these bills. There's a certain amount of cross-pollination between these two committees, individuals serving on both, so you're apt to see some more of this as we sort our way through and try to accommodate these bills in a shorter period of time. Senator Nicholas. Oh, I'm sorry. I just saw you raise, and you disappeared rather quickly. Okay. Are there any other referrals, re-referrals? With that, then, let's go ahead and go on, then, to our bills on second reading. Senate File 70, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 70, Education Accountability, sponsored by the School Finance Committee.
Senate File 70, there are a number of amendments. I would ask that the reading clerk read in second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 70. That is the Scott Amendment, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that in at this time.
Senate File 70, second reading amendment number 1, page 12, line 11.
Senator Scott, would you like to move and discuss this amendment, please?
Mr. President, I move adopt this amendment. Mr. President, this is relates to the data established, the data system of the student achievement, where, as it reads in the original bill, teachers and directors of school principals. The discussion yesterday on the Committee of the Whole amendment was that such a thing as a principal director, I'm not sure what that meant. So the solution to the whole amendment is taken all the way out. What this amendment does is come back in and puts it in a little differently, and it says relevant school principals, which would then, when you look to the lead into this section, would give the State Department of Education the latitude to figure out which principals are the ones that ought to get the information. And, Mr. President, I think that's very important because the principals have a lot of influence in this. They ought to be included. And if we haven't quite got the terminology precise, by using the relevant principals terminology, we give the State Department of Education latitude to figure out which ones
ought to be tied in here and make sense out of it. So I would urge adoption of this amendment. Senator Coe?
Well, Mr. President, I do support the amendment. You know, we had quite a discussion on principles yesterday, and I think it's really, really important part of accountability. I ask that you support the amendment.
Other discussion in regard to this amendment? Question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 70, the Scott Amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has carried, has passed. The next amendment, number 2, is the Rothfuss Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 70, second reading amendment number 2, page 8, line 5.
Senator Rothfuss, would you like to move and discuss the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate file number 70. What this amendment does is strike a little bit of language that's in the original bill. And if you look at page 8, starting on lines 5 through 8, there's a condition where upon the second consecutive year of failure to meet your targets, the Department of Education, if necessary, shall impose criteria on district allocation of resources necessary to fully implement turnaround strategies and programs within that school. What that means, basically, is that the Department of Education will then have authority over implementation of the local funding model, the local block grant. So this is a significant deviation from what we've done in the past, where we've allowed autonomy of the school districts with regard to the block grant. They get to choose how they want to spend it. This amendment removes that language. It still leaves in place a lot of the other activities, or actually all of the other activities that would go on with a second consecutive failure, where the Department of Education would help to develop a turnaround strategy, have a technical assistance task force or team that would go to assist the school. So almost everything remains in place except the ability of the Department of Education to come in after the second year of failure and tell a school district now all of a sudden how they have to spend their funds. It's that concept, again, of local control of the funding model that this amendment is trying to preserve, Mr. President. So I urge adoption and favorable consideration by the body.
Further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to... Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Nicholas.
President, I do support the amendment. I remember it's difficult to decide, but at some point, then we're going to have to... direct the advisory committee to come up with something to put some teeth into this bill. I mean, I suppose what I'd urge the sponsor is if maybe take a look at the role of the advisory committee, the select committee, to come back with a recommendation. I agree that particularly at the beginning, this thing, or this new accountability, it would be probably inappropriate to start taking funds right away until we adjust into this program. Having said that, sooner or later there's got to be some teeth if folks aren't meeting standards. I mean, we could say, hey, advertising alone may not do it. Telling people that they're bad schools or they're poorly performing schools or that they're not addressing their teacher or not moving their teachers along is well enough, but don't we need some teeth at some day to, because that's ultimately all we do, folks, is it's like an allowance to your children. If they don't do what you want to do, eventually they don't get an allowance.
Further discussion in regard to the amendment? Seeing none, I guess. All right. Question then before us is second reading amendment number 2. Senate File 70, the Rothfuss Amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
I'm going to ask for a standing division. All those in favor, please stand. Say that again.
13.
All those opposed, please stand. That amendment has failed. We are now back on the bill, and the second reading amendment number 3, that's the Barnard Amendment, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 70, second reading, amendment number 3, page 21, line 11.
Senator Barnard, would you like to move and speak to this amendment, please?
Yes, Mr. President. With your permission, I'd like to move this amendment. When this concept came down for a select committee, it was brought about because the school superintendents told us that the first hearing, first committee hearing, that our formula was not going to work. They offered to get together and do a lot of this work for us, and I'm sure they are doing some of that work. As I understood it, when we did this committee, we wanted to have five superintendents. That was my understanding. As I've talked with the education committee, we've come down to the possibility of having two superintendents, one superintendent from a large district and one superintendent from a small district. In our hearing that we had yesterday, we had a superintendent come and tell us about the problems of a small district and how they really are greatly different than a superintendent of a large district. So I know this adds one more person to this committee, but I think we're going to get a better representation of the whole Wyoming education system, and I'd ask your support on this amendment.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. President, I talked with the sponsor of the amendment about this, and I don't think it does any harm. I think probably we need to be a little careful how this committee is put together. We can end up with too much advocacy in this particular situation, but to add one more from the superintendent, I remember superintendents look from the top down, so this amendment's probably okay, and I think we ought to talk about it and probably approve it.
Further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, question being called. The question in regard to second reading amendment number 3, Senate File 70, the Barnard Amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has carried. We are now back on the bill. Any further discussion in regard to Senate File 70? Seeing none. Senate File 70, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 105, third reading of the House bill, or of the Senate file.
Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, sponsored by Senator Jennings.
There is an amendment. And I'd ask that the reading clerk read in the first amendment at this time, the Scott Amendment.
Senate File 105, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott, would you like to move and discuss the amendment at this time?
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this is one we discussed in Committee of the Whole yesterday. What this amendment does is in the plan that's being developed, that's going to consider making the federal government an offer to buy this land. And we're talking basically about the BLM land in the state. And, you know, if we owned that, it would make a tremendous difference to it. Trouble is the federal government owns it. We've promised constitutionally we won't just take it. But I think we may be getting to a circumstance, Mr. President, with Washington being as hard up for money as it is, and if we promise them they'll continue to get the same share of the revenue that they're getting right now off it, that we might be able to make an offer to purchase and maybe even get it accepted. And if we could do that, it would mean we could manage the lands without all these federal requirements that make it so difficult for us to do anything on these BLM lands. So I think it's an avenue, Mr. President, we ought to explore. I understand that the individuals involved who would look into this are pretty creative. Let's give them some license to go look and see if maybe we can structure something where we can make a deal with the feds. The provision of the amendment, make an offer to the federal government. Offers shall include the surface and mineral estates. Offers shall include guaranteeing federal government's share of mineral royalties and other mineral income from the lands. and then any other provisions that might make it attractive to the feds and consider what the source of funds might be. This might be a very sound investment if we could get the deal made. Mr. President, if Washington just says no, nothing may come to it, but we may be entering a period where Washington is willing to deal with the right conditions where it hasn't been before. So I would urge the Senate to adopt the amendment, and let's see if we can be a little creative in this area.
Senator Schiffer, I believe you were up first.
Mr. President, I'd like to divide the amendment. I'd like to divide it. Division number one would be on line 18 after the words land, semicolon, and take in the balance of the amendment down to lines 32. That would be division one, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President.
Okay, would you repeat that?
On line 18 after the words lands, semicolon.
Okay.
The balance of that line and lines 19 through 32 would be division one.
All right, I have that.
And the lines 1 through 18 through the words lands would be division two.
I believe that is divisible. Let's see. Senator Von Flader.
Was it on line 18 after lands? There's a comma on mine. I heard semicolon. Was that? Is there a comma? Am I looking at the right one?
Is it a comma? I knew it was something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a little mark.
Yeah, remedial reading.
You want me to repeat these divisions? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, is the second division something that can stand alone?
No.
Senator Scott, I'm not sure that it can, given the way that you've divided line 18. Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, in reading it over, I don't think it can stand alone, in which case I'll withdraw my request for division.
Okay.
But I would like to...
Would you want to go ahead and continue to address the entire amendment.
I'd like to address the amendment.
Okay, the division has been withdrawn, and Senator Schiffer is going to continue his discussion in regard to the entire amendment. Go ahead, right. Senator.
Mr. President, and I think I support this amendment. However, what we found over the years, negotiating with the federal government is a funny sort of deal. And sometimes they have a lot less knowledge than what we think they do. And what concerns me with the specific language in this amendment is we're laying all our cards right out on the table so they know what the deal is. What in fact we found, and I'll use the example of negotiating for some land over in Teton County, they come in and they giggle and chortle like they do, and make you a low-ball offer, and then you jerk them up short, and by golly, those guys learn. My recommendation, and I think we can correct it on third reading, is you don't lay out the cards for them. Don't help them any more than you have to. It's the same things we found out about negotiating in terms of the EPA regulations, in terms of many of the things that the federal government does, either for us or to us, they're not always as cut and dried or as informed as we think they are. I applaud it, but I don't think we want to put in statute the basics. Let's go to them and let's do some horse trading, and I think we can come out with a better deal, is what I'm saying. I agree in looking it over, part number one can't stand on its alone, My suggestion is let's pass this amendment, and we'll come in. I'll work with the sponsor on a third reading amendment, but let's not tell them the roadmap of where we want to get to.
Okay. Senator Jennings and then Senator Cooper, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. President. I look at this as a friendly amendment from the sponsor and from the horse trader, Senator. I agree with him, too.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just had a need a little clarification from the bringer of this amendment. On line 24 of the amendment, it talks about the current share of mineral royalties, and I just wonder, was the intent then not to give the federal government any future mineral royalties from any exploration or whatever that might take place after the purchase of this land?
Other questions before? Go ahead, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just so I'm clear with the Chairman of Transportation, if what he's asking the Senate to do is he asking him to accept this amendment knowing that there's going to be another amendment tomorrow? Is he asking the Senate to reject it knowing there's going to be another amendment tomorrow?
Thank you. We'll give the good senator a chance to respond here in a minute. Are there any other questions that would reflect upon the senator from KC? Seeing none, then Senator Schiffer, do you want to respond to that? Then we'll go to Senator Scott, and he can respond.
Mr. President, for my second time on this amendment, I urge you to support this amendment, and we'll come in on next reading try to change some language and clean it up. But I urge support for the amendment. It's a good deal.
Are there other questions of the sponsor of the amendment, of Senator Scott? Senator Hines?
Mr. President, I'd like him to, on line 20, explain a little more because he says the offer shall include the surface and mineral estate. If you're including the surface and mineral estate, are you referring to buying both of them, or to just explain that a little bit more for me?
Okay. Other questions of Senator, the sponsor of the amendment, before he raises for his second time? Senator Scott, go ahead.
Mr. President, answering the questions, yes, it is the language, as I wrote it, was intending that we would be wanting to buy both, and a lot of the value is in getting the mineral estate, because then you can get rid of all the federal Mickey Mouse you got to go through in order to develop those minerals. And frankly, it'd be a good financial deal for both sides. The answer to the second question, you have to guarantee them a share, their share of the royalties for future finds on these lands. And the reason you have to do that is if you don't, the price goes through the ceilings where we can't afford it. It would be irrational for them to give it up. But if you don't affect their cash flow, but transform them from the active manager to the passive investor, we get such a better deal in terms of managing our lands that it's a good deal all around. So that's the point.
Sponsor, having risen for his second time, I guess the question is before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 105. You are voting on the entire amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We're now back on the bill. No further amendments. Senate File 105, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 145, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 145, Medicaid Fraud Recovery, sponsored by Senator Peterson.
There is an amendment, and it's the BBOT amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in this amendment at this time.
Senate File 145, second reading amendment number 1, page 23, line 2.
Senator Bebout, would you like to move and discuss the amendment at this time?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 145. Members of the Senate, as we debated this bill yesterday, and I looked on page 23, the language starting on line 2, a person who fails to maintain records in accordance with Medicaid program could be guilty of a felony. And I've been around some docs and talked to them about how complicated these records are, and I just don't think that, you know, if they fail to maintain them, you could argue all day long. And I think that if we put the word intentionally in, that it really shows that people are intending to do it. Therefore, at least in that regard, they would be they could possibly be punished with a felony. Otherwise, I think it's open interpretation, and I think it's just too tough. So I would ask you support the amendment.
Senator Schiffer.
I'll leave it to clean up. Mr. President, I would urge the Senate to resist this amendment for a couple reasons, and I'm glad my colleague from Fremont County talked to the doctors. It isn't your local doc you got to worry about. They are not committing fraud. The people who commit fraud in this system, they're professionals at it. They move from state to state to state, and they'll set up a shop. And they'll sell prosthetics, they'll offer hoodoo medicine, whatever they can do, so long as they can get one of those billing numbers. That's what they are. That's who we're going after. It's not your local doc. You don't have to worry about statistics show time and again that the people who commit fraud are in fact professional. They're professional thieves, what they are. They're stealing your money, my money, and the patient's money. It's not your local doc. Your local prosecutor isn't going to prosecute them. The state isn't going to go after your local doc. We're after the guys that milk our system in this state, and there's no reason to think we're any different than any other state, for somewhere around $10 million every year. They're pros at it. They're pros. And the other side of the coin is also true. They're pros at not being convicted. That's why this specific language is in here, is to go after those kind of people. That's what makes it worth prosecuting them. It's not your local doc. He doesn't have enough practice, even if he's successful, to be really good at fraud. It's these transient types. That's who we're trying to get. I urge you to resist this amendment, because those pros will use this loophole and they'll skate. So I ask you to vote no.
Senator Scott. Mr. President, I would advise a little caution here. Maybe it's not the local docs, but the complexities of healthcare billing are such that I think it's quite possible your local hospital will get caught up in some of these things, whether intentionally or not. And I think this language may give a measure of protection, because, yes, there are the multi-state people, and it's a little harder to do in Wyoming because we're smaller. But I think that you have a good chance that from time to time your local hospital is going to get nailed. You know, you look at a bill you get from your local hospital, and typically somebody that's really knowledgeable can find an error or two. And so I think you need a little protection for those folks.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, this definitely changes that entire page on the bill and the intent of the bill. This is the first defense that people use as they defraud the state and this particular program, is that, I didn't know. And it puts an extra burden of proof onto our AG's office, whoever is trying to prosecute or find fault, puts an additional burden of proof on how do you prove intent. And so that's why we intentionally left out the knowingly or intentionally, or it's just tough to prove. That's the first offense that most fraud recipients take is that, gee, I didn't know. The standard, this is a comment from the office of the AG, the standard for our law is to prove intent to defraud. For our cases that involve fraud, we see that providers fail to maintain records in an attempt to cover up their fraud. It's a no-brainer. And so I would resist this amendment, Mr. President.
Question.
Question being called. Senator Bebout, would you like your second time, please?
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. And I agree with my colleague from Johnson County about how you're getting to when I read this. And I look at the other one and realize it was a different person. But then I go back and look through the bill to try to find out that it was a person. And then my.
The overall definition in our general statutes about a person, it certainly could include a hospital. It could include other particular people that might be involved, and just failure to maintain records really opens the door. If there's a better way to do it to get to what you want to do without, I think, having unintended consequences, I'm sure open to that. But I just think when you put the word person in there, you really open it up. So I would ask you to support the amendment. Question before us is in regard to Second Reading Amendment Number 1, House Bill 145, the Bebout Amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
I'll ask all those who are in favor of this amendment to stand.
Pretty louder.
All those opposed, please stand. That amendment has failed. Back on the bill. Take no further discussion on the bill. Senate File 145 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 146. The reading clerk will read that bill in its second reading of the bill.
Senate File 146, Teacher Accountability Act, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
There is an amendment, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read in the First Amendment at this time.
Senate File 146, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 7, line 12.
That is the Scott Amendment. I'd ask Senator Scott to move that amendment and discuss it at this time.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, in committee of the whole yesterday, and we were discussing this section, I got to reading this provision carefully and said, you know, if you read it literally, it says the exact opposite of what's intended. And this amendment's designed to correct that. This is in the list of things for which people can be terminated and physical incapacity to perform job duties, as it now reads, without reasonable accommodation. Heck, if they can do it with reasonable accommodation, you want to keep them. So the word needs to be with, or, and I wrote it as even with, so that it means what's intended to be meant. I think it's, Mr. President, almost the level of a typo.
Is there any further discussion in regard to this amendment? Seeing none, question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 2, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 146. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Senate File 146, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 150, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 150, Notary, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
There are a couple amendments. The reading clerk could read the First Amendment in at this time. That's the case amendment.
Senate File 150, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 37, line 22.
Senator Case, if you'd like to move this amendment, speak to it, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will. I'd like to move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 150. What this does, Mr. President, is goes into the repealers. And if you can look, there's a series of repealers, and it talks about 32.1. I got to get it right in front of me. 32.1105A through D, and really, Mr. President, D is worth keeping. That was a catch caught by the Secretary of State's office. And if I can tell you what D is, it has to do with how notaries can do things for in a reciprocal way for other states. So I'll read the important part of D. It says, a Wyoming notary public may administer oaths or proofs of acknowledgement in a contiguous state if that state recognizes the Wyoming notary public's authority with the state to perform these acts. So it's all about reciprocity with our contiguous states. It's important to our border communities, and I'd ask you to support the amendment.
Further discussion in regard to this amendment? Seeing none, the question before us is Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 150. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill. On to the Second Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in that amendment at this time.
Senate File 150, Second Reading Amendment Number 2, page 5, line 12.
That is the Nicholas Amendment. Senator Nicholas, would you like to move and discuss that amendment at this time?
I would, Mr. President. I move Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 150. Ladies and gentlemen, this takes a look at the bottom of page 5, lines 14 through 21. With respect to this language, I continue to struggle with incorporating what I'd call the national movement for other states into Wyoming. We ought to be cautious. But in line 14, it says, we'll receive a direct or indirect benefit so that a notary, for example, if you're, the way I would read it, if you're an attorney and your client comes in and you're doing normal legal work, you couldn't do a notary for your client. Or if, I suppose you could say an indirect benefit is that a notary at the front desk that's employed by the employer is getting some benefit. She's getting her job from that. So I deleted the, proposed to delete the word, or indirect, just because Wyoming, I think we are a little bit different, than other states. Finally, in lines 19 through 21, I'm proposing to eliminate that entirely. That's the provision that says that a notary public cannot administer an oath or acknowledgement to a spouse, for a spouse or a child or an ancestor or a sibling. And it seems to me in Wyoming there's, incidentally, there are other parts of this bill that says you can't unduly influence the person signing it. And as I pointed out before, you can't take a direct benefit, so you shouldn't be notarizing a document that transfers a house, for example, from your parents to yourself that might injure your siblings. That's fine. But on the other hand, there are lots of times that you may be sitting in Hudson, Wyoming, and you need to sell a car, and the only notary in town is your brother-in-law, and you run over and have him notarize the car so you can run in and sell it the next day. Who cares about those events? It seems to me that there's other types of things that the protection on this. We've lived a long time without these types of restrictions, and I'm frankly aware of no. There are sometimes where the abuses, but it's not the abuse of the relationship, it's the undue influence. And there's other provisions to deal with undue influence. So in those instances where there's no undue influence and you're simply trying to acknowledge or accommodate and particularly administer an oath. I mean, there's no reason why if somebody needs to sign in a document where they swear it's true and they just walk over to their brother-in-law and have them say, would you administer the oath to me? You do, and it's signed, and it's on. There's no harm in that. So it seems to me that we don't have to follow the national movement in that. We just don't have a problem. I'd urge your support of the amendment.
Further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, question before us is in regard to Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 150. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has carried. Passed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion in regard to Senate File 150? Seeing none, Senate File 150 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be carried a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list on third reading today?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and consent list for today is as follows. Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design. Senate File 139, Healthcare Pilot Project Amendments. Senate File 140, Kindergarten Attendance. And Senate File 143, Federal Natural Resource Policy.
Would anyone like any of the bills removed from this consent list? Seeing no one, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 121, Senate File 139, Senate File 140, Senate File 143. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich. Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 121, are there any changes?
Rothfuss,
aye to no. Martin, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 121, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 139, are there any changes?
Case, aye to no.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 139, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 140, are there any changes?
Case,
aye to no.
Burns,
aye to no. Nicholas,
aye to no.
Perkins,
aye to no.
Hines, aye to no. Bebout,
aye to no.
Dockstader,
aye to no.
Johnson, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Schiffer,
aye to no.
Cooper,
aye to no.
Geis,
aye to no. Emmerich,
aye to no.
Peterson,
aye
to no.
Anderson, aye to no.
President Anderson, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 140. 15 ayes, 15 noes. Senate File 143. Are there any changes?
Burns,
aye to no.
Schiffer,
aye to no. Close. Esquibel, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 143, 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 121, Senate File 139, Senate File 143 have passed the Senate. Senate File 140, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, Senate File 140 has failed to pass the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 52, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 52, Teacher Tenure, an Act Relating to Education, sponsored by Senator Cole. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are some amendments on the back, and the reading clerk would read in third reading amendment number one to Senate File 52 at this time, please.
Senate File 52, third reading amendment number one to substitute bill number one. Delete the first Cole Committee of the Whole amendment.
Senator Bebout, would you like to move and address this amendment this time, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 52. Members of the Senate, I apologize for bringing this type of amendment to the body on third reading. I thought when we talked about this issue yesterday, we spent a lot of time on it, that we had the amendment plugged in properly in the substitute bill. Having taken another look at it and working, not me directly, but staff working on it yesterday for a considerable amount of time, I bring this amendment to you to clarify some issues and to do what they think really, to go over real quickly what this does and just reiterate it is it sets up a mechanism for a four-year situation on the non-probationary teachers. So in reality, what will happen, you will have your three-year probationary situation that exists now under current law. Nothing really changes in that. On the fourth year, they will be offered a contract, and if that contract has been offered, they accept it, then they have a four-year period where they are protected under the due process exactly like it is currently in our statutes. After that fourth year, then they are at will for that period of time, and they may or may not be offered the next contract for the next 4 years. If they are not offered that contract, and if you'll recall, our colleague from Albany County provided the cheat sheet that showed you, they do have an APA board hearing with no evidence in front of the school board to determine whether or not they should, in fact, be offered that contract, even though the principal may have removed that offer. And, of course, the reason, and we talked about it yesterday, is it really affords some protection, I think, to the teaching community because of ill-advised people wanting to terminate them for reasons in the first 2 or 3 years of that. And I think it gives them that protection. And Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, having explained that, I'm going to go through the amendment as quickly as I can, and I'll be glad to answer any questions. If you look at the amendment on the first page, the first language, the first part of it, lines 1 through 24, is cleanup language to be consistent with what this amendment does. The next part of it, Mr. President, is lines 25, and this is where we put in a definition of non-probationary teachers. Staff thought that we ought to be clear and define that. Under A, it's pretty clear. It says that you have your three consecutive years before where you're probationary teacher, but after that, the fourth consecutive year, you would be a non-probationary teacher. Then under 31 through 35, that's if, in fact, you are 2 years as a probationary teacher in one district and should move to another district that you're taking care of. Mr. President, then going on to the second page, there's cleanup language in the first part of that on lines 1 through 6, and then after that on page 7, line 10, additionally, a non-probationary teacher may be terminated for any reason not prohibited by law as provided in subsection H of this section. And Mr. President, what we did, if you go on to 3, and you'll see we put into the law a definition under H exactly what this means and to be sure that we clarify that. Mr. President, then going on on page 7, line 10, insert B, there again it's clarification on probationary and non-probationary teachers. Mr. President, on line 25, we talk about C, and we strike the language on page 7, lines 12 through 15. And you can see that's the language where we talk about continuing contract, about dismissal, termination, or suspension. And we insert this language to be very clear that it deals with the two issues. You have your portion of it that's termination, and you have your portion of it that's dismissal or suspension. And as we talked about the other day, dismissal or suspension occurs in the middle of the school year, and then you You obviously have with or without pay, and nothing changes in that part of it. The rest of the language, if you look on 34 through 46, we put back in the reinsert stricken language termination because of the definition that we have on page 2. Now, Mr. President, when you get to the page 3, H is really, the guts of this entire thing. And if you look at that and read it, a non-probationary teacher may be terminated for any other reason not prohibited by law under the following circumstances. It talks about notice for termination is given in the fourth school year. It's what happens every 4 years. And notice for renewal is provided prior to April 15th of the applicable year, fourth year, and prior to the school year district offering the teacher accepting an offer to renew the teacher's contract for the ensuing year. And Mr. President, this is the issue where after 4 years, then they may or may not be offered that next four-year contract. And that's the
30 seconds, Senator Bevel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Then we talk about intervening years and the items on J. And then we get to page 20 or page 10, lines 10, 11. Very important. We put in the hearing provision. We delete 27105 because it's in subsection H of this section. And, Mr. Chairman, you go on to the last page. It's clean up again and renumbering. And we took the definition out because on line or page 13, lines 12 through 17, because we have the definition. So we definitely have the definition of probationary. We have the definition of non-probationary.
Time.
We have the four-year period. Thank you, Mr. President.
Discussion on this amendment. Senator Schiffer.
Amendment.
You're on.
No, I'm John. Mike left. And, Mr. President, the reason I am, because look at what this incentivizes in this amendment. Say your child is in first grade. That principal's going to do nothing for 3 years. Your child goes from first grade through third grade, possibly with a very poor teacher. But that principal's not going to try and get rid of that teacher. They're going to wait till that fourth year when they don't have to have a hearing or any accountability. What's significant in that? If your child doesn't learn to read between first grade and third grade, the odds of them being successful in school go down exponentially. And this builds in an incentive for that principal to do nothing with a bad teacher for 3 years, wait till that fourth year and we'll nail them. And it's fine for the principal. It provides no assurity to the teacher, but it robs your child of a critical 3 years of education. If the teacher's bad, get rid of it. Make that principal do their job. Make them document this is a bad teacher. And you do it because they can harm a child, particularly in those crucial years, for the rest of his educational career. This is a bad amendment. I urge you to vote it down.
Other discussion on this amendment? Senator Rossless.
I support what my colleague from Johnson County was saying. I think it even goes further than that. What you end up seeing under this circumstance is 4 years where it's really the teacher's obligation to try not to make any waves. Because, again, they know that at the end of that fourth year, while they may have been teaching very well, there's still no good or just cause protection. They're going to be fired for any reason not specifically prohibited by law. And in allowing that, you are just still going to have that situation where after 4 years you need a new football coach, or after 4 years you're going to fire somebody because they're gay, or after 4 years you're going to fire somebody because you want to hire your brother. Without the proper protection that the good or just cause language provides through the case law and the standing that that has, then you're just back to a system where you have an absolutely arbitrary termination every fourth year instead of every year. And while obviously, Mr. President, that's probably better, only having an arbitrary right to fire someone every 4 years is probably better than having an arbitrary right each and every year, it's still not a good solution. And I oppose this amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the amendment before the sponsor takes his second turn. Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I suppose I could support the premise that
principals or and superintendents who are supposed to look at these folks and determine whether or not they are performing wouldn't do their job. But frankly, I think most superintendents and principals would do their job in this 3 or 4 year period. And I really don't think it rises to that occasion that would be something I would be fearful about as far as not voting for this amendment. And I believe that it does try to strike some kind of a compromise into the bill where you have that arbitrary right every 4 years and every 1 year. So in that regard, I think that it makes the bill a little more palatable. But I believe that most superintendents are going to do their job, certainly like most teachers do their job. So I really don't have the fear that we're going to have a problem with that.
Other discussion on the amendment before the sponsor stands for his second time? Seeing none, Senator Bebout, would you like to go for your second time?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. To answer the concerns of my colleague from Albany County, he's right. You know, you have what you're doing instead of having occur every year. If they've gone through their probationary period, it will be every fourth year. So he's absolutely correct. That's a policy decision by the member of the Senate. As to my colleague from Johnson County, you know, I looked at the language, and if you look at we put in there on page 7, line 10, and also the existing language within the law, that you still have the same 3-year probationary period. So anybody that's hired will still have the same 3-year probationary period, and it will not happen where if they're a bad teacher and they just come into the system, they sit there for 3 years and don't do their job. That doesn't change with this proposed amendment. What changes is that under the Cohen to Bebout amendment before, we clarify that it is a 4-year period. And it's a period that certainly after that fourth year you will, but you are afforded, you know, the right to go in front of the school board in a hearing in that regard. I would ask you to support the amendment.
Question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 52 being substitute bill number 1. The Bebout amendment, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. I'm going to ask for a standing division to vote on this one. All those in favor, please stand.
Well.
All those opposed, stand. That amendment has failed. We are now back on the bill and on to the second amendment. And I would ask that the reading clerk read in the second amendment at this time.
Senate File 52, third reading amendment 2 to substitute bill number 1, page 12, line 20.
Senator Coe, would you like to speak to this amendment and move it at this time, please?
Yes, Mr. President. I would move third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 52. What this amendment does is brings into perspective what's happening in accountability. We take this Senate file and delay the effective date to July 1st of 2012. What this amendment does allows that debate on accountability to take place, which is going to happen, I believe, with the bills that are in front of us. In the interim, gives us a chance to come back to town next year about this time in session, delays that effective date so we can have an overall discussion and not take this particular item out of that debate. So with that, I'd ask that you support the amendment. I think it strengthens the bill. If you have concerns about the bill, this allows you to come back and address those concerns. It allows this group to work in the interim. I ask that you support the amendment.
Any discussion in regard to this amendment? Seeing none, question before you is then regard to third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 52, substitute number 1. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Senator Coe, would you like to speak to the bill?
Mr. President, first of all, I want to commend the body on what I think is one of the best discussions we've had on education maybe as long as I've been down here. This bill did not come about because Coe raised his hand up and said, I'm going to go out and bash teachers. And that's what I've been accused of doing. This bill came about because the Select Committee on School Finance that worked in the interim serious about accountability. That became 75% of our discussion towards the end of the process. Accountability. There's bills in front of us right now that we'll see on accountability. There's one we talked about yesterday. There's actually two we talked about yesterday over and above this bill. At the end of the day, we brought this bill to the table for discussion. The Select Committee did. We started talking about it. We're serious, serious about accountability. And I believe this legislature is. This is part of the discussion. Now, we've had a great discussion on this bill. I put my heart and my soul into it. I don't have to talk about my record on education support and funding over the last 6 years. I've been a huge advocate of education, going back to the 2005 recalibration. But you know, in this debate, and the education community has spoken loud and clear, and you've heard from one side of that. You've heard from one side of the constituency out there. I submit to you that if you go to your districts, and you go to your districts and you ask, I'll make you a wager that 70 to 80% of the people in your districts support this bill. Now, in this mix, there's a voice out there that we haven't heard from. It's a voice that can't talk. It's a voice that doesn't have the ability to even know what we're doing down here. That's the kids. There's 87,000 kids out there that we have a constitutional responsibility to provide the best education possible with the resources we have available and make it as free as possible. You haven't heard from that voice, and we have a responsibility. And I can tell you what's going on right now with $1.5 billion a year in education, K-12, folks, the results are not there. Why aren't they there? I think it has to do with this particular issue. So we've had a wonderful debate. I thank the body for their patience in this debate. I think it's been one of the best debates I've seen on education. I ask that you support this bill. I think it's of paramount importance as we go down the road of accountability. We are serious about accountability. This should be part of the mix. I'd ask that you support Senate File 52.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I always like to make some decisions, I guess, kind of based on facts. And I've heard a lot of anecdotal information concerning this particular bill, but I'm wondering if any of the sponsors or anybody else could help me with some of the facts. We've approximately got about 8,000 teachers out there. Have we ever surveyed the principals to find out, in their opinion only, exactly how many of those 8,000 teachers would be at risk of being fired or maybe they're underperforming? I'm trying to get an idea as the size and the scope of the problem. And have it on actual data, whether it's accomplished by survey from the department or some other data that or study that you can point to that says of those 8,000 there's 80 or there's 800. I'd just like to know what exactly the size and scope of the problem is by some scientific means or manner.
Other discussion on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, on and against the bill, if we're serious about modifying contracts out there that exist, then part of that seriousness, well, part of that debate involves a requirement that we decide how we're going to modify the contract. And I submit to you the bill requires an appropriation. You go out and say, okay, we'll pay everybody $2,000 to modify their contract. Pay $3,000, and here's additional consideration. Part of that, we're going to change the rules. Frankly, I'd be willing to do that if I thought
by changing the teachers from their present contract status to to at will and paying them, let's say, $3,000 a teacher to change that contract, that we would get $3,000 more performance out. I don't think we're going to do it. It doesn't warrant or justify paying teachers more at this point, because all the study and all the information that we're getting and that we received during recalibration was that there are other factors that are limiting the teachers from going into education. Part of what we're finding is, and we did the study this summer, is that on average the teachers, people that are going to the College of Education, have some of the lowest GPAs out there in the nation, in the college of university. We're also finding, interestingly enough, that they're graduating. I said that wrong. They have some of the lowest ACT scores as they go into the university. And ironically, they're graduating from the College of Education with the highest GPAs. They're coming in with some of the lowest ACT scores. They're graduating with the highest GPAs of the university. And I suppose that could be because the College of Education is the most rigorous colleges and taking all these kids and turning them into geniuses, or it could be because there's a lack of rigor there that we ought to attend to. But my concern is that why is it that we're not attracting the highest GPA or higher GPA students, higher ACT performing students into education? And I go back to to my own career and those of my children. As I pointed out before, my wife's a teacher. It was a wonderful career. I have four children. Not one of them went into teaching because the rewards aren't there. An engineer, you go out and the average salary for a chemical engineer is $56,000 a year, $80,000. And at the end of the day, you can move up in the corporation. You can take over a corporation. You can go into management. You have all these wonderful career opportunities. But when you go into teaching, ordinarily you don't see teachers being hired out to run companies. You don't see teachers being recruited to run oil rigs, to go out and do extraordinary things that get the same corresponding revenue. So you're trying to get the best and brightest to come into your college or to your teachers, to become teachers. And how do you do it? The answer is you're saying, overall, this is a rewarding career. If you happen to be a really bright student and you love your summers off, you'll get your summers off. If you love teaching kids, you like being involved in their lives, there's no better place to be part of this our environment. I can recall being in Japan when I went to school there. Teachers were sensei, doctor. They revered their teachers, and the teachers were decently compensated, but when you became a teacher and you went to join the school, you knew that it was a career and they would take care of your families. If we lose that character, that this is a career and a rewarding career, I submit to you it's going to be harder to recruit people to say, take 4 years, channel yourselves into this career, make it your life's work. But by the way, if you get crosswise with a parent, a teacher, or another better teacher comes along, we're going to fire you. It seems to me that we're trying to recruit folks, make it a career, and we want them to get better. We need to require accountability. We need to insist and demand and performance. And in the end, this bill doesn't get there. You're trying to create an environment where you're addressing 5% of the problem, and at the same time, inadvertently, 5% won't do it. Thank you.
I believe Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
President, members of the Senate, for those of us that have been around and been through all of this education reform since the Campbell decision, we've been involved in litigation throughout.
And I'd like to applaud the good senator from Cody for raising the level of debate with regards to accountability by bringing this bill. However, we really seriously need to think about what are the potential consequences of further litigation should we pass this bill. And I urge you to take a look at the Attorney General's opinion letter of January 17th, our own staff opinions with regard to the potential risks of litigation that face us if we pass this bill. The United States Supreme Court has already ruled in the Brand case that this would be an unconstitutional taking of a property right. What does that mean ultimately? It means that we're probably subjecting ourselves to a rash of Section 1983 lawsuits as a result of the unconstitutional taking of a contractual right. The Attorney General's opinion speaks specifically that Wyoming cases would lend itself to the very fact that this would be an unconstitutional taking without due process of law. That our statutes right now prescribe a contractual right. There are, and we've heard of another case, a state Supreme Court case in Minnesota that said to the contrary. However, I would submit to you that in terms of the hierarchy of cases, the Minnesota Supreme Court case versus the United States Supreme Court case probably doesn't rise to the same level. So when you think about this and you think about your vote on this, I urge you to consider whether or not we're inviting class action or multiple lawsuits in the future. And I am very uncomfortable submitting ourselves to further litigation, having been through litigation and litigation and litigation with regards to education reform.
Senator Scott?
Mr. President, let's look at a few of the salient facts and keep our eye on what we're doing here. We're spending an awful lot of money on education. And, Mr. President, for most of my 33 years down here, I've been an advocate for spending more because we weren't spending enough. And now we've finally gotten there. We're the top in the nation. We've been doing it for some time. Our results are not bad, but they are nowhere near what they ought to be. We ought to be the best, and we aren't close to that. Something's wrong, Mr. President. A number of things are wrong. I don't think that bad teachers that ought to be replaced are the major cause of our problem, but I think they do contribute. And we need to do something about it. So where do we stand with this bill? The amendment that just passed was critical. It gives us a delayed effective date. That's a technique I've seen used a number of times in this legislature, Mr. President. Our criminal code, which is an excellent code, is largely the product of just this process. We passed the effective date, and that made everybody take the project very seriously as an interim committee worked through and got the thing in good shape. And that's what this bill does at this point. It is far from perfect. It has some legal questions. Those are solvable questions if you do it right. And there was a good illustration, Committee of the Whole, how you can do it. What you do if you vote aye on this bill is say that during the next year, we are going to take a very hard look at getting a solution to this issue of tenure. We're going to come back with something that is better than what is before us now, Mr. President. But it is going to be part of the solution. And it can only be part of the solution because it's only part of the problem. But it will be part of the solution to our difficulties in education. And we need to depart from just business as usual that everybody's comfortable with, because that is not getting adequate results. This bill is a first step to solving a part of the problem. It's not the final answer. It's a first step, and the delayed effective date means for sure it's a first step. I would urge the Senate to adopt the bill in its current form.
Senator Rossless.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill. This bill, as I see it, really is a step towards mediocrity. And that's a step I don't want to take. There aren't too many people in here right now who have their kids actually just beginning the process, beginning our public education system. I moved back to Wyoming for our public education system. I've got a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old that are just beginning their steps through this program. And I personally, like most of you, I was engaged in the Wyoming education system, the public education system. I had good teachers. I had mediocre teachers. I had bad teachers. I think we all probably did, realistically. But the reality is, what we're assuming in this bill, an inherent and a flawed assumption that I don't think is correctable in this bill, we're assuming that the principals, the administrators, are somehow at a higher standard. They're flawless. They can make the true and correct decision. Only the teachers are the problem. That's what this bill is assuming. That we're going to hand the power to select the good educators to a group that we don't necessarily have any accountability standards or measurements for either, Mr. President. We're giving a power to a group that, in my view, is no less accountable, has no fewer bad apples than the group that we're trying to work against effectively. And that's how I see this bill, because we are sending a message out to all of the teachers that you're all on notice. And what's the effect of that notice, Mr. President? The effect of that notice is keep your head down, don't stand out, don't make waves, or it'll cost you your job. So the effect I see for the education of my children, if this bill takes effect, whether it's a year from now or 2 years from now, is mediocre teachers. Not the bad teachers, because I do agree. This bill will probably get rid of most of the bad teachers, unless they happen to be the brother of the administrator. It will get rid of those bad teachers. But what I fear is when I look back over my education, the best teachers I had were probably the most annoying to the administrators. They were the ones who made the principal actually do their job. If they didn't like the way things are going, they would walk down to the office and say, "This is not going the way it should be. We are not performing." They were the ones who challenged. Because by and large, a lot of those teachers, the good teachers, are in fact better educators than the principals. They are the masters of the trade, and they are the people that we want to empower, and the only way we can empower them to stand against the administration is if they don't have to worry about being fired for any reason not specifically prohibited by law. We have to give them the support that they can rise against the administration if the administration is making bad decisions, and that's the process we have in place. This bill goes too far. We all know that we have other options on the table. We have good options. I haven't met a teacher yet, Mr. President, that has said, "I don't want to be judged based on fair data. I don't want to be judged based on my merits and my educational accomplishments and the ability for me to teach the students." They just don't want to be arbitrarily terminated at the whim of an administrator. And I don't think that's too much to ask, Mr. President. And I'd urge the body to vote against SF 52. Thank you.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. President, on and against this bill. And the reason for that, I guess in summary, what this bill reminds me of is a popular expression of just several years ago. I think we've all heard it. We destroy the village in order to save it. And this is kind of the way I look at this piece of legislation. So I would urge you to vote against it. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, when I before the session started, I really didn't know entirely how I felt about this bill, and people have been lobbying and talking about it for a long time. And I sort of said, you know, I want to keep an open mind and listen. I've got good friends on both sides. And Mr. President, I just keep falling back on my background as an economist. And I look at how we do everything else in the United States and in, you know, market countries, where I think about my career, where, you know, I work for one of the largest companies in the United States. And it was a huge company. And there was no job protection, no tenure. It was a successful company. Bosses weren't arbitrary. They weren't out to get employees. Employees didn't feel that they had to hide and didn't suddenly become mediocre because there was standards of performance. I mean, it really does work out there in the real world. And I'm overwhelmed that we've come here, and I can't understand beans about education, to be honest. PhD economics, I don't know half the things that we're talking about here because it has gotten so convoluted and so out of touch with everything that I, in my heart, have a feel for or what the textbooks tell me. It's one fad after another, after another, after another, and it is out of touch with reality. And I listen to my good colleague from Albany County, and I hear him talk about how, you know, the system is so backed up that we're not even getting the best and the brightest into the system. But one thing we're not giving them is a chance in a system that's not capped by this thing called tenure. Or, you know, it's crazy to me that we're going to stand here and we're going to say, let's keep it mediocre because we can't open it because we've already set the rules for the new people coming in, and we literally want them not to be to trade job security for everything else. That's exactly what he said. I don't want people that want job security. I want people that want to teach.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, this is not the first debate that this body has had or this government or this country has had along these lines. This goes back a long time. This is not the first hard decision we've ever had to make. And I want to share with you just a few words of wisdom. There was a guy named Thomas Paine back in 1776, and I think it's very pertinent to the discussion that we're having today. And in that, he drafted a thing, and I want you to think about this. He made a statement. He said, a long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right. And at first raises a formidable outcry in defense of custom. We've always done it this way. We need to continue to do it this way. And what I hear this argument today on the floor is for the status quo. That's what I hear. As we're arguing for the way it's always been, we've never asked ourselves, and all the times, and I think that's what the good senator from Cody has brought to us, we need to ask ourselves, at this point in time in our history, just because it's always been this way, is this the right way? I say, and for and support this bill, is a rejection of the status quo. Is it the best tool out there? We don't know. But I can tell you one thing, the status quo isn't serving the kids of this state very well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill, my feeling is this bill, we can still get rid of bad teachers. I submit to you that this bill will stifle education, stifle the openness in individuals. And, you know, you talk about accountability. You want to talk about the kids.
The best comment I think I heard through this debate was we should be talking about teaching, not teachers. We've heard about, you know, my good colleague from Goshen talked about basing this on the facts. And we've heard a lot of facts about, you know, I heard somewhere out there that, you know, that we're either the highest or one of the top 10 in the nation on teacher salaries. Anything I could find doesn't support that. We've heard that passing this bill is going to be able to stop litigation, and the costs are astronomical. Talked to my district and didn't seem to support that. That getting rid of passing this bill is, you know, if you have a reduction in force, that there are all these good teachers will be staying or have to go when we have these horrible teachers. My district says the RIF policy is in place, and that's going to not change with tenure or without tenure. We have a measure of getting rid of bad teachers today. Looking at administration, why is the administration doing their job? We talk about principal accountability in other bills, and there should be accountability, but the accountability should rest with administrators. And when you talk about looking at this objectively, I know a teacher in Green River that takes and accepts a higher than average number of special ed kids. Where's her accountability going to be? There's nothing in this bill. There's too many unknowns out there about what's going to happen. What about the, you know, I have a teacher here that says they have one student that has been in six different schools this school year already. It's not a illegal immigrant. It's just three kids that took extended vacations through the holidays. And they're going to be accountable for them? And we talked about hearing from the kids. I submit that the bill here today, we should have accountability, but I don't believe that this is the right avenue to do this. And I just ask you not to support this.
Further discussion, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. When we heard the testimony on this bill and some of the other bills, it seems like, and we've heard the numbers anywhere from 1 to 5% of the teachers is what we're talking about. But we're getting 30 and 40% input on this, from the teachers on this small percentage. We've heard through this whole debate, it keeps going back to the principal and the administrator not doing their job. That seems like we're shifting the blame from a teacher that's ineffective or bad teacher, whatever you want to call them, over to the administrator. But what we really need to do is work on that teacher. Now, one of the things that I think that we'll do with this bill is we'll take a mediocre teacher and put the fire under their tail and push them towards help. And we've got all kinds of programs out there that we've offered the teachers with instructional facilitators and, you know, this and that, the National Board Certified. I mean, we've got a lot of programs trying to push these teachers and make them better teachers. But there's a group down here that doesn't participate. Now, I've followed this chairman over here for about, oh, goodness, too long. But I watched him and learned from him about how to make education better. And about 5 or 6 years ago, he said, you know, if you're on this recalibration committee, you're going to learn all about education. And boy, was he true. But what we heard back then was we weren't paying our teachers enough money. So we worked through it, and we figured out a way to come up with this new funding model and all the ins and outs of it. And all the teachers were there, and all the administrators were there supporting the teachers and saying, more money means better teachers, which means better students. The money's on the table. The return's not been there. Now, why hasn't it been there? I've got a constituent that used to be a teacher, and she was a good teacher, and people around the community recognized her for the students that she turned out. She's not in teaching anymore, and the reason was because the teacher across the hall that taught the same subject that she did had very few students in her class because she didn't do a very good job. But here's this good teacher getting a full class and then some because she had the reputation of doing a good job. We also heard some testimony about some new people that came to the state, and they were in line signing their kids up, and they said, well, we'll go to this class, and then you got this class, and the other parents go, no, you don't want your kid in that class because that's not a very good teacher. Does that drive that teacher to get better? No. That just drives that teacher to sit there. We heard administrators and superintendents say, there's no way I'm going to fire a teacher. Because if you don't offer them a contract, some of those teachers that don't get offered a new contract are going to say, okay, fine, I'm getting out of it without a lot of publicity. But you have that one every once in a while that says, no way, I'm staying. And then you go through it and you drag it out, and then there's money, and we've got all kinds of numbers floating around on the one that just happened up my territory. But whatever the number is and how much money you spend, that's a teacher's paycheck that we took out of the system. And that's months of looking, putting administrators in court and taking them to a different area. We need a better way to do this. It may not be a great big break in the system, but it's one that we need to address. And with the extension on this and with going into the interim, this is the tool that we need to have to start working with. If we've got constitutional issues on this, then we need to address them. Maybe we need to phase it in. And the new teachers coming in, they're the ones that fall under this different kind of contract. Whatever it is, look at the tool we have in front of us. It's a good tool. There's a lot of thought put in it. And I know how my chairman is, because I've taken the heat back home too, but sometimes you got to draw the line in the sand and know where to stand, and this bill stands well. I urge you to vote yes on it.
Question being called, Senator Schiffer. Go ahead.
You've got another tool in front of you. This isn't the only one you've got. The other tool says, here's how we set a standard for teaching, and here's how we're going to evaluate teachers. This is the measurement device. This bill does not contain that. This bill is just punitive. It just takes away the security, the ability for a teacher to develop into a good teacher. Again, I'll reiterate, and I said a couple days ago, the debate should not be about teachers. It should be about quality teaching. And Senate File 52 is not about quality teaching. It's about trying to hammer somebody. I urge you to vote no.
Final comment from the sponsor.
Well, Mr. President, very briefly, and I commend everybody for a great debate. And I commend my good colleagues from Laramie County and Albany County. And I can't debate the legal ramifications. When I was going to university, I was doing a different bar exam than you guys were. Clearly, this bill, I think, brings a tool to us to really, really talk about accountability. And with the amendment that we just passed, it gives us that ability to have everything in front of us. We've had a great debate on this bill. It's been a wonderful debate on this bill. I talked to some administrators up in my district, particularly the superintendent. Every time we have an opening, he gets 25 to 30 applicants. And I said, are they coming to Wyoming because they have that umbrella of protection that tenure gives them? He said, no. You know why they're coming to Wyoming? We pay better than anybody else. We have the highest salary structure in the country if you take cost of living into consideration. We have no state income tax. That normally is a 10% increase over and above what they make when they come here. They have some of the best working conditions of any place you can go with new buildings. And guess what else? They found out that Wyoming's a good place to live. So This ramification that's been talked about, that tenure provides that protection and that umbrella, understand, to the good senator from Albany County, the average teacher salary is approaching $59,000 a year. So I bring those facts to you. Now I want to thank everybody for a great debate. I hope you would support this bill. Allow us to go forward into the interim. In the accountability bill that we talked about yesterday, there's a select committee on accountability. This particular committee can sponsor legislation. They can look at this issue in the interim. They might come back and recommend that everything we do with this bill, if we pass it, that we take it back out. Let us have that debate support this bill. Let's move forward with accountability.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 52. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call a roll.
Barnard? No. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 12 ayes, 18 noes.
Senate File 52, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 52 has failed to pass the Senate. Next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 107, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 107, Energy Impacted County Roads Program, an act relating to counties, sponsored by Senator Meyer, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 107 does have an amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 107, third reading amendment number 1 to substitute bill number 1, page 2, line 19.
That is the Meyer amendment. Senator Meyer, would you like to move that amendment and speak to it at this time?
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a Nicholas Meyer amendment, but I'd be welcome, very welcome to move this amendment and to number 1, third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 107. Mr. President, this is basically kind of a cleanup amendment in a couple of areas here. The first part of it on page 2, line 19, we wanted to make sure that the determination was made by the board. That ties everything together in that section. The other one is on page 5, line 9. It just delete the thee and insert the than because it should be less than. Page 6, line 9 goes into the end of the bill and the appropriation. We say we delete it's for grants to and insert pursuant to 916-102J. That's the legislative authorization contained in the bill. Page 6, line 10, this was brought about by the discussion from the good senator from Fremont County to make sure that we have the proper geological citation as far as how it should be structured. We delete the Niobrara oil shale development and insert oil development in the Niobrara or similar formations, again, as determined by the State Loan and Investment Board. So with that explanation, Mr. President, and I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Anybody else like to speak to this amendment? Seeing none, the question for us, third reading amendment number 1, Senate File 107. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those, no. That amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Senate File 107, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? The chief clerk will call a roll.
Barnard? Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? Christensen? Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
No.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Closing vote. Landon, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
Senate file 107, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate file 107 has passed the Senate. Senate file 125, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate file 125, Health Care Facilities Crisis Management, an act relating to public health and safety, sponsored by Senator Scott, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate file 125, there are some amendments. The First Amendment is the Nicholas Amendment. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Senate file 125, third reading amendment number 1, page 4, line 22.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to move and discuss the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 125. Ladies and gentlemen, this provision cleans up the Standing Committee Amendment 1 amendment to make sure that what the intent was is there's a $25 million sitting in the auditor's reserve. The recommendation of the Appropriations Committee was that if the governor were to require funding to make loans, that he make them from that auditor's reserve. So this deletes the general fund. It's what we intended to do. It was just an omission that we're cleaning up. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion in regard to this First Amendment? Question before you is in regard to third reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 125. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye. All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Would the reading clerk please read in the second amendment?
Senate file 125, third reading amendment number 2, page 2, lines 18 through 24.
Senator Perkins, you'd like to move and discuss the amendment, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd move third reading amendment number 2 to Senate file 125 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. What this amendment does is this comes back as just a repeat of yesterday's amendment to address a number of the problems. If I'll just go through it really quickly. What we did is the first thing we do, you see in subparagraph 2, we said before we just appointed a crisis manager. We added the language that was brought up by the good senator from Laramie County, that the crisis manager is appointed to represent the state's interests and objectives as set forth in this subsection, which is the language that was in the bill before when we moved it. So we brought that in. The other one we did in subparagraph 3 there, you see that we put an overall amount, a limitation on this of $100,000, so that we left the 21-day requirement in there. But we also put an overall requirement that be reduced to $100,000, so that no more than that will be expended in any single instance. Additionally, we added some additional requirements on the two subparagraphs, A and capital A and capital B. The first one was that the cost would only be expended when we had to pay the direct cost necessary to facilitate. So we added those words, pay the direct cost necessary, to that section. So we were talking about and making sure that we're only paying for the cost of transporting patients and facilitating their move from one to another. We're not talking about any other types of costs that might be reimbursed or money going to old creditors or loans or anybody else. The other thing we did in subparagraph Cap B was we also limited the temporary assistance there, so it would only be provided as a secured or post-petition creditor, so that we're talking about that the state would, that under B, that these would be loans, that they would either be secured or they would have to be post-petition creditors, which would help protect any of the state's interest in any of the amounts that were paid in this regard. We further limited it by that they would only be used to pay the ongoing and current costs of operations while that plan is being developed. So again, that was to limit that to keep the doors open to pay staff, pay for medication and food, so that you don't have a blank check. We know exactly what it is, and that if there was a catastrophic shutdown due to malfeasance or insolvency or even a natural disaster that the governor would have some limited, very limited authority to go in and make sure that these patients are either moved to another facility or that there could be a little breathing room while there's allowed for someone else to come in and take over the facility and run it so that these people would be protected. With that, I'd stand for questions, but ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Other questions or discussion? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just had one question on this with respect to the amendment, and it perhaps reflects in the bill also, but the amendment here. Is there any chance of the original owner or operator of the facility coming out of this with any possible financial gain or in good standing with regard to the bankruptcy? In other words, is there any possibility of advantage either from this amendment going forward or from the bill itself? Thank you, Mr. President.
Are there other questions? Yes. Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, to answer that, there is no possibility of that from the actions of this bill. What this bill is, and it's a shadow of what was what came to us originally, but it gives your governor authority he does not now have, Mr. President, to deal with an urgent crisis, so a financial crisis or a natural disaster doesn't turn into a human tragedy. The owners of one of these facilities may eventually come out whole if their real estate that they can't translate into cash right away can ultimately be sold for more than their debts. But that's independent of the action of this bill and doesn't help them in paying the bills during the crisis, where you've either got to find a buyer or you've got to be able to move people to other facilities. And that's what this bill does, is to facilitate that process so that the people are taken care of and let the business arrangements take care of themselves.
That answers the question. Are there any others? Senator Perkins, do you care to remark further?
No.
Let's deal with the amendment. Then the third reading amendment number 2 on Senate file 125. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion in regard to Senate file 125? Seeing none, Senate file 125, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Cole?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
No.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Anderson,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
Senate file 125, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate file 125 has failed to pass the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, unless you want to go to something else, I would say that that clears the desk. Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Announcements? Senator Hines.
Mr. President, the Revenue Committee will meet in 15 minutes to consider House Bill 117, engrossed data processing service centers, tax exemptions, and if time allows, House Bill 145, engrossed vehicle registration, timing, House Bill 146, and gross vehicle sales and use tax.
Other announcements, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, February 9th, in room S18, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to consider House Bill 217, engrossed production states agreement.
Other announcements. Mr. Minority Floor Leader, other announcements. Seeing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. The Senate shall stand recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon. We are...